Recently, I was on Brian Wilson's Libertas Media Project, and I thought you'd like to hear what we talked about.
You know, one of the great things about on-demand podcasting like this, unlike hosting a regular talk show, is the time we both save not having to do certain things. We do not have to sit through commercials or contests or traffic and weather together on the whatevers. We just cut to the chase, knowing that you wouldn't be here if you weren't truly interested in the things that we talk about. And what we talk about is about our freedom, liberty, individual rights, how to get it, keep it, protect it against the enemy. And anyone who's ever given it serious thought will quickly conclude the most prevalent and all-encompassing enemy is the state, also known as government, the gift that keeps on taking. Taking your liberty, your rights, your money, your property, your job, children, health care, even your freedom to move. So what do we do about that? Well, students of the subject know the current two-party fascist paradigm that we have right now has only put us in dire straits. And as Dire Straits pointed out some years ago, that ain't working. So, fortunately, we have a plan. Initially, it may rile your cognitive dissonance, but at the end of your objective analysis and logical considerations, I think you will conclude that this is not just the only option. It's our only option that leads to the assurance and protection of the freedom, liberty, and individual rights that are so important to us. It's all laid out in this book right here, which I'm holding up to the microphone so you can see it. It's called Against the State, okay? And it is a... you notice in the subheading, the state, an anarcho-capitalist manifesto by my guest from the prestigious Mises Institute and overseer of the merry band of scribbling contrarians and misbehaving geniuses at lourockwell.com. Welcome back, Lou Rockwell.
Brian, great to be with you as always.
It's my pleasure, sir. I hope everything was swell out on the left coast. You and a bunch of our mutual friends had a grand old time.
We did indeed, and as usual, I'm especially impressed by all the young people who come and the electric nature of the atmosphere. I mean, it was just everybody was interested, everybody was engaged. It was a tremendous experience for the speakers as well as, I'm told, for the audience members. And we were talking about society without a state. Does society, that is the voluntary aspect of human relations, does that need a monopoly overseer with a whip and a gun and a hangman's noose and the rest of their tools? So, of course, we were arguing, no, we don't actually need that. Even though it's something almost universal in human history, like murder and robbery and rape, the state always been with us in the most part. There have been societies without states, but they're very much in the minority. So it might seem utopian. I would argue that the utopian view is to think that the state is capable of protecting our freedoms. I mean, that's their alleged reason for existence. They're going to protect our security, protect our freedom. Obviously, they don't do it, and they make everything much worse. They steal our freedom. They steal our property.
It makes a great commercial for them, and people have been swallowing it for how many hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Oh, by the way, I got a note from Jeff Deese today, this morning about the new Mises.org website, and I checked that out, and congratulations, very attractive, and I'm looking forward to taking the tour a little bit later on, which of course addresses the point that the Institute is this great purveyor of so much literature that addresses the issues and the solutions that you were just mentioning. So congratulations on that.
Well, I invite everybody to take a look, Mises.org. It's a tremendous improvement over our previous website, which had problems. It sort of grew like Topsy over the years. So this is an entire redoing of it, which is a massive project, a huge number of people involved, and temporarily, and also the people here at the Institute involved still had their regular jobs. So they were this was an amazing project, but we're very pleased with the way it turned out, and we'd love people to look at it and give us their ideas, things they like, things they don't like, for that matter.
Well, we're going to throw a link up on the website along with a bunch of other links on subjects we're going to be discussing this morning or this afternoon or this evening, whenever you're listening. And you can go pursue that and take the same tour that I'm going to take. And you'll be amazed and appalled if you've never been there at the treasure of information that's available to you. There's someone once said, the best way to market something is to sell the sizzle, not the steak. And I'd like to spend some of our time here considering the sizzle of your book, Against the State, so that listeners will be attracted to all the great ideas and realities behind them that you've written about. And then I'd also like to spend a few minutes discussing your latest article, Can Anarcho-Capitalism Work? Okay.
Sure, wonderful.
Excellent. Okay, so let's get right to the book. I want to read this one part. Actually, I got several parts that we're going to read, but this one part to start off. You write, instead of requiring the fruitless task of teaching everyone what's wrong with farm subsidies, what's wrong with the Federal Reserve bailouts, what's wrong with the military-industrial complex, what's wrong with price controls. In other words, instead of trying to teach all Americans the equivalent of 3 graduate courses in economics, history, and political philosophy, the anarcho-capitalist society demands of the public only that it acknowledge the basic moral ideas common to just about everyone. Do not harm innocent people, and do not steal. Everything we believe follows from these simple principles. Now, as attractive and compelling as this is, it's no wonder that the state has used its power and resources to suppress it. Considering the lead that the state has on us, how long is it going to take to win enough hearts and minds to overtake and supplant it?
Well, I think as we face something like, say, the U.S. government, which is the biggest, richest, most powerful, most encompassing government in the history of mankind, I think we can tell that it's the extent that it was ever effective at doing anything except killing people and stealing their money. They're much less effective today. The thing is, it seems to me visibly a wreck, whether we look at their foreign policy, the domestic policy. Of course, they're wrecking us in the meantime, right? They're living it up. But I think that there's no question that public faith in the government is declining. The polls show it. I think if we talk to people we know, that doesn't mean that they're about to become anarcho-capitalists. But it's the first step is their thinking, you know, there's something wrong with this system. And I think especially those of us who cherish liberty, and of course the government has been increasing in size and power ever since the adoption of the Constitution, not evenly, but in jagged steps, but always worse and worse and worse. But since 9/11, and, you know, we could talk about what happened in World War I or World War II or the Civil War or whatever, the other horrible periods. But we all remember, all of us who are adults remember what's been happening since 9/11, the vast surveillance, that we can't make a private phone call. We can't have a private email. We're not safe from surveillance in our own homes. It's, you know, 1984. It's the sort of thing that we always used to blame the Soviets for, and rightly so. But now it's here. Then we also have, of course, the government taking more and more money, the Federal Reserve pumping out amounts of newly created money unheard of in the history of civilization. We have politicians running every aspect of our lives, whether they look at Obamacare or just everything they do, there's something wrong with it. So I think that especially young people are beginning to see this. They don't like the foreign policy. They don't like the perpetual wars. They don't like the surveillance. They don't like Obama's and the government's attempting to mess even more with the internet than they are today. So I think there's reason to be hopeful because they are so bad, because they're so inefficient, they're so incompetent. Just any of us who've ever had anything to do with the government, I don't care whether it's in the military or the public schools or the post office or if we're unlucky enough, the CIA or all those sorts of agencies, there's something fundamentally wrong with them.
I can't even go to the airport.
Well, the TSA, that's exactly right, molesting people. And for no reason at all, by the way, this is just, in my view, an attempt to humiliate us and control us and make us accept anything they do to us or their families.
Well, let's take that. Since government, we're in agreement, government is such a destructive force against freedom, liberty, and individuals, and yet most people recoil at the idea of eliminating it and replacing this mountain of laws and regulations and intrusions with the free market of mutual cooperation and voluntary exchange. To dissemble the state, then, how do we reverse these conditioned responses, this cognitive dissonance? It's kind of a Stockholm syndrome dedication to the slave owner that's abusing us.
Well, it's exactly right, and of course it's why the government spends such a vast amount of time propagandizing us, indoctrinating us. Public schools are all indoctrination academies designed to make people, in fact, the founders of the American public school system in Massachusetts back at the beginning of the 19th century argued we needed public schools to produce good workers for big business and also to compliant workers for big business and also to make sure that people obeyed the government. If they were ordered to go fight a war, they would do it without questioning. If they were ordered to pay over their taxes, they do it without question. And that they offer obeisance to the government. They actually patterned the American public school system on the Prussian system, which was designed, again, to produce good little soldiers, good little taxpayers, good little obedient citizens.
Isn't that where we got kindergarten from?
Yeah. And, of course, again, they want more and more control over the children. So this is why they want to abolish, for example, summer vacations. It's why in New York and some other cities, children are in school from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. They have three meals a day in the public schools. They want to break the connection between the parents and the child. They want the child responsible to the government, not to the parents, not to the community, not to the church. So this is why this is what Plato, of course, outlined so many thousands of years ago as the best thing to have the government actually raise your children, take them away from the parents and raise them to be good soldiers and et cetera, as usual.
So you get the children under the auspices of the government from 7 to 7, and the parents are dependent upon the government through the welfare state.
Yeah, and also because of the Federal Reserve and the decline in Americans' incomes, and because of their wanting to break up the family, most fathers and mothers have to work.
Mm-hmm.
So if the government is providing free daycare, this is maybe difficult for them to resist. But they end up not having their children anymore. Their children have been trained by the government. They're taught by the government. They're indoctrinated by the government to love the government. They're given the government lies that they call history, government lies they call economics, government lies in a host of different subjects. They really are at war with the parents. And today, we can see it's actually the government that claims to own your children. They don't say you don't have final say. The government always has final say. Court, some judge, prosecutor, whatever. It's always mm-hmm. They don't like your religious beliefs. And they think the child would be better off being taken care of by Obamacare Hospital number 17. They take the kid away. So this is an alarming and outrageous thing. And we can go down through all of human activities and all of human society that we see the government intruding. One of the aspects of democracy, as Joe Sobrin pointed out, that in a democracy the government says there's nothing beyond it. There is no area of human life that's none of the government's business. If the government decides to intrude and control, that's fine. Because, of course, the government is we, according to the democratic myth. Of course, the government is not we. The government is a separate entity. It's a parasite upon society. It's our enemy. It's not we. We're not the government. It always bothers me when I hear people say, hey, should we go to Mars? Well, I don't know. You can go to Mars, but don't force me to pay for it.
I'm not picking up your tab. So, that's right. Yeah. Why don't we go to dinner? I mean, the same thing. Well, the thing about it is that if you, and for those of you listening, when you look at the contents of Against the State, you'll see that all of these things are dealt with, and I can assure you, having read the book, that they are dealt with in great depth with lots of references to other authoritative material and other individuals like Murray Rothbard and so on, the war system, the war on drugs, the assault on our liberties, bankers' war on America, the Fed, American fascism, it's all in there, but as I said at the top, we're just going to deal with, just going to skim a stone across this so you can get a sense of how compelling the content of this book is. I wanted to ask you, since we're on that subject, that you were just talking about, government being ubiquitous and intrusive and all-inclusive and all the rest. Washington, as in George and some others, apparently maintained the famous expression, government is force. And history shows that the state not only claims a monopoly on the initiation of force, but ultimately does so at the expense and loss of individual freedom. So initiating force against freedom becomes a pillar of immorality, as I see it. So considering the smallest, most limited designated responsibilities in order to enforce even limited regulation, would it ever be possible to actually have a limited government?
No. Now, is a smaller government better than a bigger government? Sure, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not denying that. But the idea that government can ever be limited, it seems to me in all of human history, whether we think of political theory or economic theory or just, again, our historical experiences, no, because government doesn't believe it should be limited. We may think it should be limited. It doesn't believe it should be limited. And it's a monopoly that claims the right to take whatever amount of your money it decides it wants, and to initiate, as you point out, initiate force. So one of the basic bedrock principles of libertarianism is that the moral law applies to everybody, so that the things that are wrong for us in our private lives, or just because somebody's in a government suit or getting a government check, doesn't mean that criminal activity is okay for them, and indeed public service and patriotism and the greatest thing you've ever seen. So if theft is wrong, and of course we all understand that it's dramatically wrong, calling it taxation doesn't change its nature. So we're all taught, you know, what was it, the evil Oliver Wendell Holmes saying that taxation is the price we pay for civilization? No, it's not. It's the price we pay for decivilization.
Yeah, right. That's like saying, let's go to dinner. Yeah. But as you pointed out back in the introduction, the paragraph that I read, the basic moral idea is common to just about everybody. P.G. O'Rourke said it a little bit different way. He says, you don't hit people and you don't take their stuff. Same thing. You do not harm innocent people, as you point out, and you do not steal. But government does both. With impunity.
Well, and in fact, not only does it do with it with impunity, we were supposed to salute it. We're supposed to, you know, thank everybody for their service, who's in a, you know, a policeman or a fireman or a, all government employees, of course. These are the people who are praised in society, soldiers and so forth. Nobody ever goes up and thanks the small businessman for his services, the nurse, the doctor, the clergyman, the father of a large successful family. Nobody ever thanks them. But they're the ones who actually build and make civilization, not the parasites. These other people, government employees, are all parasites living off others by force. They put a gun to your head and they say, hand over your money. Now, it could be a mugger on the streets of New York, or it can be the IRS. This is the way all these people operate. Gun to the head, if you don't pay enough, we're going to put you in jail. If you sufficiently resist, we claim the right to kill you. In fact, these people claim the right to kill you if you sufficiently resist paying your parking ticket or your library fine.
Yeah, ultimately, a man with a gun is going to come over and pay you a visit.
And as we know, the police, who are have become an occupying force in every city and town, and we're the enemy, by the way, of the occupying
mm-hmm.
force. They don't hesitate. They always shoot to kill now, and they certainly don't hesitate to taser people multiple times, including for the alleged offense of, you know, disrespecting them. So they don't have to respect you. You have to respect them.
It's remarkable how quickly people will rush to the defense of anyone who makes that charge that, oh, no, the policemen are our friends. They every morning they get up, they put on a uniform, and they put on a gun, and they go out and they put their lives on the line for us. And, well, no, not really. There's this inconvenient Supreme Court decision several years ago that said they have no obligation whatsoever to do any of that. They're just supposed to clean up the mess when it's over. So regardless of whether you're by yourself out in the middle of the country or you're surrounded by 47 other policemen, ultimately you're on your own.
You know, we're all propagandized by Hollywood, too. It's not only official government. So we have television program after television program about the police. They're working 24/7. They're dedicated. They're brilliant. They're concerned with, you know, connecting, stopping the criminals, punishing the criminals to protect the public. They're a government bureaucracy. And if anybody's ever had anything to do with the police, even on a peripheral basis, are there decent policemen? Sure, of course there are.
Mm-hmm.
There are decent postmen and so forth. But the police as an institution, they're a bureaucratic institution, they are by and large a bunch of lazy bums. They're not out working hard any more than people in HUD or HHS or the White House or, you know, any other government. They're not hard workers like the rest of the government. They're all bureaucrats, and their whole life is oriented towards collecting a big pension, and police and firemen and public school teachers now have pensions in the millions of dollars. And of course, they all make, government employees make about double in terms of salary and benefits as the average taxpayer.
Yes.
So this is part of the ruling class, albeit a lower part, because you have the oligarchs on top and many layers of power between them and the average cop. But, yeah, they're not, the policeman's not your friend, which is, again, not to say there's not a decent, I've known some great guys who were cops, but I must say they're very much, as they would tell you, by the way, if they could disguise their voice, they are very much the exception.
Yes.
Most of these guys are psychopaths. They are virtually all veterans and they've had terrible experiences, horrendous experiences, killing people in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they look at us like a bunch of potential terrorists. It's why they don't hesitate to shoot people. It's why they train with shooting targets of women and children, mm-hmm. as well as men. So there's something, as the government gets bigger, it gets more vicious, it gets more evil, and we're seeing it right before our eyes. So is the answer to say, you know, go back to the Constitution or whatever? I don't think so, although that would be certainly an improvement. But the Constitution itself was a problem in that it stepped up government power and government centralization from the original Articles of Confederation, the probably the most libertarian government ever, if you say such a phrase.
Well, and therein lies
established
the...
Established after the revolution.
Yeah, and as I was discussing with Judge Napolitano the other day, a piece of parchment is not a really great weapon against the Leviathan. It's a great idea, but someone also famous and intelligent said that the Constitution was designed for a moral society, and once you get a group of individuals in there that can figure out how to game the system and essentially use the Constitution against you, then, well, the jig is up pretty much.
I appreciated Gary North pointing this out, that in his great history of taxation, Alvin Rabushka, who's a scholar at the Hoover Institution at Stanford, says the key result of the adoption of the Constitution was the tripling of taxes from what they'd been under the king.
Yeah, that's.
I know that'll shock you.
They didn't bring that one up even in my prep school American history class.
No,
something got surgically removed from the text. But you know what? The neat thing is that brings us to another point that I wanted to get to from Against the State, appropriately enough, in the chapter on American fascism. Fascism is the system of government that cartelizes the private sectors, centrally plans the economy to subsidize producers, exalts the police state as the source of order, denies fundamental rights and liberties to individuals, and makes the executive state the unlimited master of society. This describes mainstream politics in America today. I can't imagine anybody disagreeing with that. Fascism also thrives as a distinct style of social and economic management, and it is as much or more of a threat to civilization than full-blown socialism. If fascism is invisible to us, it is truly the silent killer. It fastens a huge, violent, lumbering state on the free market that drains its capital and productivity like a deadly parasite on a host. This is why the fascist state has been called the vampire economy. It sucks the economic life out of a nation and brings about a slow death of a once thriving economy. Now, with this vampire's teeth in my wallet, things get pretty grim after that. The statistics, the demographics, the economics, until you get to, and I don't want to give away everything here, but until you get to where Lou kind of gives you a hint of the future. I can think of no greater priority today than a serious and effective anti-fascist alliance. And then over at the end of the chapter, a quote from Ludwig von Mises himself, "In the long run, even the most despotic governments, with all their brutality and cruelty, are no match for ideas." And that brings us to your article, "Can Anarcho-Capitalism Work?" Which, again, we'll have linked on our website. By the way, our mutual friend, Judge Andrew Napolitano, told me you just cribbed that from a speech you made last week when the two of you were hobnobbing over in California.
That's true.
But I digress. You say, but can it work?
Not easy, by the way, to be on the same podium as Judge Napolitano.
He said the same
about
you.
One of the great orators of our time. I mean, he sounds like, you know, it's like being up there with Cicero or something. I mean, it's sadly unfair.
Well, but the content of that piece... Well, you said, can it work? It's all very well to raise moral and philosophical objections to the state, but are we going to need a plausible scenario by which society regulates itself in the absence of the state, even in the area of law and defense? These are serious and difficult questions, and glib answers will naturally be inadequate, but I want to propose at least a few suggestive ideas. Now, listeners are going to have to read the whole article to find out all of those ideas and what they are, and the link is on the website. Like I said, don't keep me repeating myself there, but nevertheless, let's just take one example. You cite PayPal, and as internet denizens, we're all pretty much familiar with PayPal, but how was it that this was such a great idea and a great example of how anarcho-capitalism could work in that area?
Well, when PayPal was first in operation, of course, it's always been a great company, and I remember joining it very early on, founded by libertarians, by the way, Peter Thiel and others. But they had a problem. They had a terrible problem with phony transactions and crooks in all different countries in the world stealing people's money through PayPal. So they would track, every time one of these things, they would investigate it, they'd track down the criminals, and they turn over the information to the FBI. And as I'm sure everybody's going to be shocked to hear, nothing ever happened. So then what PayPal came up with was a programming genius, enabling them in virtually all cases to spot likely phony transactions and prevent them from taking place. And they did have nothing to do with the government. They, in fact, had to circumvent the government to do it because, of course, you're not actually supposed to do that. You're supposed to, again, turn over everything to the cops where they just, laugh at it. There was a story today in the London Times about the British police for a very long time have not been putting into their records some huge number of crimes that are reported because it makes the statistics too high. You know, that's true of the FBI, which is the secret police. It's the American KGB other kinds of. But how much better for customers and the company and society in general if crime is prevented than rather having to go after the creep who stole other people's money?
Which is
much better if he never gets to steal the money.
Right, right. Which is the solution that PayPal came up with, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, there's just this last point from the article, Can Anarcho-Capitalism Work? The point of this book is to speak frankly. And this is Lou Rockwell writing here. At times, perhaps even shockingly so, in order to jolt readers out of the intellectual torpor in which the ruling class and its system of youth indoctrination have lulled them. We might have a fighting chance if most people were aware of the ideas in this book and in our intellectual tradition generally. They would never fall for the state's propaganda line, its apologies, its moral double standards. They would be insulted by these distortions and dissimulations. And then came the standing ovation, and everybody went and had champagne.
Hey, what? I never got my glass.
Yep. Well, you know what? I've got a fishing trip planned for down in your neck of the woods, so I'll come by and we'll get a bottle. I think Ripple's got a new champagne out. I could probably
afford. Brian, it'd be great to see you again.
It would be great, Lou. I really enjoyed our afternoon together. I'll keep you posted on the itinerary there,
and
maybe we can do that. Thanks again for making time for us now and then, Lou. Thanks for the work, for the Mises Institute, LouRockwell.com, all those other behind the scenes things and stuff that you do to advance freedom. And against the state. Thanks a whole lot.
Brian, it's an honor to be on your show, as always. And many different non-religious philosophies all over the world all throughout history that you should treat others the way you would like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to me another piece of objective morality, but take a look at Murray's book.
I am.
You'll find it very, like everything of Murray's, very, very interesting and compelling. But he talks about natural law, and he talks about all these kinds of issues.
I will do that. I have to admit, I've spent more of my discretionary time sucking up everything that Ayn Rand wrote, virtue of selfishness and objectivism.
Oh, sure, no,
all that business. But the
read all of Rand too.
Yeah, but there's an element. I think a silly little millimeter or a grain of salt or something that's missing from some of the. It seems to me that it's at so many points she was so passionate about the principle and about the objective and about making herself clear that a certain element of humanity, was somehow missing. Maybe I'm misreading it, but that's...
No, I think she had her problems, and she had, of course, a cult, and although I blame Nathaniel Brandon for that rather than Rand herself.
Yeah, I know. It's her intellectual air that I've always had a problem with. I interviewed him once out in California when I was on KSFO, and what a jag-off. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. It's
and
just,
Leonard Peikoff.
That's the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big gun control guy.
Yeah. What a maroon.
Police state. He's a monster.
What a maroon. I mean, he's just done... horrible things for that. But I just ignored him and never went back. But some of the things that the Ayn Rand Society or something, some of the material they crank out is interesting and so on. But I'm not saying this because you're on the phone, but not nearly as compelling as just the average piece that you get off of NewRockwell.com or any of those other places where I've able to stick my toe in and pull something out that was worthwhile. But I'm gonna get the Ethics of Liberty.
You have amazing toes, Brian. Is all I can say.
I'll send you a joke about that one day. Maybe at the bottom of that Ripple bottle, and we can have fun with that. Lou, thanks a lot for the guidance.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It's an honor.
Very cool. Thank
Great
you very
to talk
much.
To you.
Talk soon.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.